Welcome back to the Drain Plug Podcast, everybody. We're still kind of getting set up here, but this episode is sponsored by TBNation.net. Visit TBNation.net for all of your John Boat needs. We appreciate Tiny Boat Nation for sponsoring this podcast.
What do we got for products this week?
Yes, product spotlight. Well, obviously still that Light Skiff Air, the Lumar manual and electric shallow water anchors, and I feel like there's something else. Oh, all the Newport stuff.
Yep, we got the Newport NT300s.
It's the inflatable. One of the inflatables. Okay. Don't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it is like the first thing you're going to see when you hit TBNation.net. So if you are curious about it, go check it out.
So we're going to be talking today about our top 10 most regretted things that we did in previous boat builds, like things that we wish we could take back. But most importantly, we're here because Ryan's going rye. That's what we're going to call this episode. Ryan's gone rye. We're going to be testing out two rye whiskeys tonight.
Just the smell in the air is completely different than
when we do bourbons.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, Ryan's, how many ryes have you tried aside from the one that I brought in a couple weeks ago?
You know what this smells like? What? Without even taking a straight sniff of it.
What?
That, the mineral spirits or something.
Mineral spirits?
Yes.
I don't get that, but okay.
Or what's the other one that we have back there? We don't have acetone, so it's not acetone.
Denatured alcohol?
Denatured alcohol.
I don't get that.
You don't get it?
I don't get that. There's an ethanol presence, it doesn't smell like your bourbon type ethanol because it's
when you stick your nose in it, it doesn't smell like it. But just out here in the air right now, after you pouring these two glasses,
I don't know. Maybe
it smells exactly like
maybe it's just because your brain's overthinking because you're nervous that I'm about to turn you off of bourbon and you're going to be a rye fan after this.
I don't think that's it.
So the first one we're going to try is the Russell's Reserve 6-year rye. Now, I don't know the mash bill on this, but I can tell you just from my experience drinking ryes that this is not a super high rye content. So you got like your 95.5 ryes and your 100% ryes. This one is, I don't know 100%, but I can tell you by tasting and smelling it that it is not a super, super high rye. It's over 51%, somewhere in there between 51 and 95, but it is not a 95.5. They don't give you all that great information on the bottle like Wilderness Trail does, which is the other one we're going to be testing out here in just a minute. But we'll give this a run and see what you think. It's the most unturkey, wild turkey product there is.
I have mixed feelings.
What are your mixed feelings?
I don't even know. It's not bad.
No.
But there's just nothing sticking out to me on it.
So to me, I get an upfront grassy note. Not like a fresh cut grass, but there's like a grassy type flavor to it. Little grain forward, but I do get a good barrel note from it. It's got just a little bit of oak. Not over. It's only I think it's a 95. No, it's a 90. It's 45%. So it's really easy to drink. Not super heavy, but it's also not overly complex in flavors.
That's what I can tell you that it doesn't. It's not very thick. It's very thin.
The note that I do pick up on it, though, have you ever opened up a package of raw almonds?
Yeah.
It's kind of got that almond nuttiness to it, but it's not really heavy, though. It's very light.
I was getting that grassy note mid-palate.
Yeah.
And then at the end, like very end, that's when I started getting that barrel note.
It's different. To me, it's smooth. It's easy to drink. It's a great introduction into rye.
I mean, but why do this when you could do regular Russell's? Like that's a great bottle.
I agree. But not everybody likes bourbon. There's some rye fans out there. Okay. It's not the worst rye I've ever had, but it's also not the best. So, yeah. But all right, let's get into our list. So the first one that we have on our list of things that we wish we would have never done to our boats or things that we regret. The first one is one that I am dealing with now, and that is putting your switch panel or electrical things that you need to access inside of hatches. I personally did this on my boat. I put my switch panel, my circuit breaker for my trolling motor, and everything that I need to push inside of a hatch that's not easy to get to.
Inside your front hatch.
Inside my front hatch, all the way in the front of the boat.
Underneath the front deck, meaning when you open the hatch, you still have to even reach down in there.
Yes. So I have to go, like, around my front pedestal seat if I've got my seat in there. I've got to open up the hatch. I've got to hold it open, and that's a big hatch. It's, like, 27 by 30-something.
Yeah, not that heavy.
No. But I got to hold it open while I'm reaching in there with one hand trying to hit whatever switch I'm going to hit. But it's also mounted so low in the boat that I literally have to, like, kneel down on the deck to lean down in there and get to it. And it's just a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
But that was like a trending thing for a while where everybody's like, oh, I got to have this little hatch and open it up and have all my switches.
Well, but and yeah, stuff but not like that. I mean, it was a hatch, but it was still, you open the door and it's right there.
Yeah.
Yours is open the door, brace your body for the leaning you're about to do.
Yeah.
Dive all the way in there.
Yep.
And then try to figure out which switch it is that you're trying to hit.
Yeah, because you can barely see it because it's way up in there.
Yeah.
So that was a stupid mistake on my part. So if I can offer anybody any advice, if you're doing this for the first time or you're rewiring a boat, put your switch panel, even if you have to break it up into two switch panels, but put your switches where you're going to be using them.
Accessibility to those things is key.
Yes. So like your live well, if you are a tournament fisherman and you know that the first time you turn your live well on is when you're putting a fish in the live well, you probably want those buttons or your switches and all that stuff within reach of the live well.
I have another real world scenario for this as well.
Okay.
You know how we put all of my switch panels are up front.
Yep.
Underneath the trolling motor.
Except for one.
Well, except for two. My front and my rear spotlights.
Yeah, that's right. We put both of them on there.
They're on separate switches, but those are on the cockpit
like
up against the vertical wall for the rear deck. Yep. We got stuck out in a rainstorm one night, midnight, 11:30-ish, and it was pitch black out, and we started feeling this water. I'm like, oh, no. And so I asked my fiance, I was like, is it raining? She's like, I don't know. I think it's just water coming up from the lake, you know? Boy, I hit that switch right there on the side for those front spotlights, and it was just downpouring and white capping, and
golly.
We were in the middle of a freaking hurricane.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. Well, but it was very nice having that switch there so
right
I could
there,
see
where you
right
need.
There, because if not, I would have had to turn the motor off, run up front, find the switch, hit the switch, run back.
Yeah.
And then, because then at that point, I don't know if I, because I don't like to have that light on while I'm running down the lake unless I need it. So I usually just flip it on real quick so I can see what's going on and then flip it right back off. So I'm not bothering anybody else. But, yeah, that was a scenario where having that switch close by and easily accessible was very handy.
And that's the thing is that when we were building your boat, we took the time to think about that.
Yeah,
we did. You're going to find out a lot of these things that we're going to talk about are all failure to pre-plan and things that we didn't think about. You know, if you got a console on your boat, it's kind of simple. Everything's going to be on that console. But if you have a boat where you're driving a tiller handle of any type or a mud motor or anything, put your stuff in the back of the boat where you're going to be driving that you might need while you're driving. If you got lights on the front, on the outside, on the rear, you know, interior lights, you know, if you're driving down the lake and you drop something and you need to reach down and grab it real quick, it's really hard to see. If you got to run all the way up to the front of the boat and go hit a switch to run all the way back to the back to go find something that you dropped in the floor.
Right.
So things to think about. The next one we got is one you came up with, the improper live well plumbing and cable planning. And that's dealing with like the actual routing of the plumbing and where everything's going to go. So what have you experienced with that?
Biggest thing is the cable, for one, you know, you're going to get a 6-foot cable, so you need to know where you're going to run that, and you can't have, like, 90-degree bends or anything inside that cable.
No,
so,
by cable, you're talking about the one that flips it from empty to auto. That comes in the Flowrite premium kit.
And then the other big thing about that is the 2 inches you're going to need below the tank to accept the drain fitting.
Yeah.
So that's something that is easily forgotten because, you know, we put the subfloor in first. Obviously, you're working from the bottom up, but you can hide that hose underneath your subfloor.
Yeah.
And be fine.
But you got to pre-plan for
it. You got to pre-plan for that because you got to run that hose, put it in a designated area, put your subfloor down, cut the hole, pull that hose through,
yeah.
drop your live well in, hook it up, and then fully finish seating your live well in. But, yeah, so that's just and that also goes back to improper planning as well.
Yeah,
but
that's what a lot of these are. And with that cable, it's not only important to remember that you can't make any 90-degree bends, but kind of pre-planning what wall it's going to go on mm-hmm. or if it's going to go on a console or something.
Because it's directional.
Yes, it's directional. So, like, if you're going to put it on a console, it needs to be on the far left-hand side of the console so that way that cable can come out of the housing for the switch and run straight before it makes a turn to go into your sidewall or down to your subfloor or right. whatever. We put ourselves in some bad situations before where we were installing a live well kit. We forgot about that. We planned on having it on one wall, mm-hmm. but because it's not reversible, you're kind of screwed. You got to go put it on this other wall over yeah. here, and now you've already drilled a hole for it, so now you got a hole to patch. It's just, it's a nightmare.
Yeah. Next one, poor foam in subfloor.
I just hate poor foam in general. I know that it's nice and it stiffens up, especially the V-hole boats, and it's safe and all that stuff, but it's a pain in the butt to deal with. And if you don't have everything 100% pre-planned out in your boat where it's going to go, something as simple as drain lines for your hatches.
Well, yeah. I mean, we can keep this simple, stupid. Number one, don't use pour foam unless you have a deep V.
Yeah.
Number two, if you have a deep V and you're using pour foam, think about the drain ports for your dry hatches and where you're going to run them.
Yep.
And because you can't just drill underneath the subfloor like you can, you know, when you're using the pink foam, because it's just yeah. going to soak up in there. It has nowhere
exactly.
to go.
Exactly. And that's, we're building a boat right now, and that's one of the things that we've run into is the rod locker is literally sitting on an entire block of pour foam. So to run the hose, normally we would just drill a hole through the subfloor right where that drain line comes.
Yep.
But because it's full of foam, we're having to route it all the way to the center of the boat,
yep.
which we can't do because it's the cockpit.
Yeah.
So we have to run it all the way down the side of the rod locker and into the back compartment of the boat so that we can get to the center portion that doesn't have any pour foam in it.
Yeah, but at that point, we're just going to run it out to the very back so that way you don't have to drill any other holes or do anything.
Yeah.
And it'll just go straight to the bilge. But it's definitely not an ideal way. You're doing more work for no reason.
Yeah, it's if you just take the time to think about all this stuff before you start pouring that junk, you can kind of have it pre-planned and not have to worry about it. The next one we got is battery size and gas tank size before we build a boat.
Boy.
We've had a couple that we've built. I think of one in particular, that red boat that we built, where we were like dead set this thing's going to have a 12-gallon gas tank. Well, it was a flat bottom, and it was also a low-sided flat bottom.
Yep.
And when we built it, we did not measure the gas tank before we set the deck height, and the deck height was about a half inch too low to fit a 12-gallon gas tank in.
Yeah.
It was almost too low to put a 6-gallon gas tank in, and we had to literally heat it up and squish it in there to get it to fit.
Yep. There's been another one where we've had to use 2 6-gallon
yep,
tanks and
true.
Put them together in order to have the 12 because the 12 wouldn't fit.
Yep.
Battery
sizes, too, the same thing. You have to make sure that
yeah,
from your subfloor up to the bottom of your
thank
deck
God
height.
For lithium, too, though.
yeah, because
worst
can turn
case
them on
scenario,
side.
You could put that on the side, but. Yeah, if you're definitely using lead acid, you need to make sure that you're having enough height in your compartment to hold these items, because these are going to be the biggest items that typically go into the boat and are the hardest ones to, or where you already have a designated or selected area where you have to put them. So
yep. Then another thing that kind of pops up in my mind, and we always think way ahead on this, is when you're running like an electric style boat and it's got an electric outboard on it, and you're going to be running multiple bigger batteries. That back hatch that those batteries are going to go into, not only do you have to have an... Are you okay?
I don't like that.
You don't like it?
I don't, I'm dude, whatever that is at the beginning, it's like making me tear up.
Really?
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't know what that is. I thought it was getting... But it's not heat. It's not like, oh, well, I'm drinking straight alcohol. You know what I mean?
Really?
It's not hot. I don't feel like it's hot. It's a flavor thing for me.
It's that grassy kind of note
yeah.
that you're not a fan
I'm
of.
I'm just not, or maybe I'm just not used to it yet. I don't know. I'm not a fan of it right now, though.
I like it. Not my favorite, but it is really good for a rye. But what I was talking about with the electric batteries, so a lot of them are real big and long, and we're going to put like one on each side of the boat or one up next to the back of the live well or something to kind of get them out of the way.
Right.
You have to remember that when you go to take those things out, if you have more than one of them, you have to have enough room to move them around to actually get them out of that hatch.
Yep.
And we've had a couple of situations where we go to put them in, and you can get one slid in all the way, but then once that one's in the way, when you go to put that second battery in, there's not enough room to physically move it to wiggle it back in that corner that you wanted to put it in or up next to the live well. So,
or even in my situation, like we have the opportunity where we could be running a 96-volt motor.
But we can't fit two batteries in there.
Can't fit two batteries in there.
Yep.
Had we thought about that a little bit differently, I probably would have put that live well tank
sideways.
Well, I guess sideways, yeah. Like it would have been running from
forward a little bit more.
You know, bow to stern instead of left.
And also,
right.
We didn't put your subfloor all the way to the back of the boat.
Yeah, we did about as much as we could, yeah.
Well, I mean, if we knew we were going to be running two batteries, we could have moved the live well forward just a little
That's
bit more
true.
and made more subfloor area to put those batteries on the side of the boat, but we didn't.
And number five, not building correct height transom.
Yeah, so if you, we see this a lot where people buy a used John boat and they build it, and then they have a motor that's a long shaft and they have a short transom boat.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've already built it and they're like, well, what can I do to modify this to make it work? So like in my personal boat, the problem that I'm having is like I want to run a surface drive at some point. Well, my boat was built with a 15.5-inch transom. There's only like a couple people out there that make a short shaft or a short transom surface drive. So in order for me to run something like a Gator Tail or a Go Devil or something like that, I would have to rip my transom out and rebuild it. If not, I'm just going to be like hobbling together something to make it work, and it's never safe.
Right.
So like if you know from the get-go that you're going to be running a long shaft motor and you have a boat with a short transom in it, go ahead and replace it with a transom that is built up and welded in correctly instead of trying to hobble something together later, because it's a lot harder to do. My other thing that I'll add into that is I did the cheap route and I went with a wood transom, which there's absolutely nothing wrong with it, but it would be a lot easier to modify an aluminum transom to add onto it to build it up to the height that I need now than it is to rip out an old wood transom, because now my deck's attached to it. I had to have to rip out basically the whole back deck, the transom, all the bolts and everything.
Yeah.
When if I had an all aluminum transom from the get-go, like I should have done, I could just weld on top of it and brace it up and it would probably be fine.
Yeah.
So let's get on to the Wilderness Trail. Hopefully you will like this one a little bit better, because my plan for Ryan Goes Rye is not Ryan right now. Ryan is not Ryan.
I'm not Rye yet.
All right, so let me tell you a little bit about this. I'm going to go ahead and give you a pour of it so you can start giving a little sniffy sniff. I cleaned that out for you, by the way.
Thank you.
So if you don't know anything about Wilderness Trail originally started out as a yeast company. They were making yeast for a lot of the big bourbon distillers and whiskey companies and stuff like that. So they've had a lot of experience before they actually started making their own bourbon. But what I love about Wilderness Trail is they actually tell you everything that you'd ever want to know right here on the label. So this is their barrel proof rye. It's 53.5%. It's 107 proof. And this is a sweet mash. And they tell you exactly what the mash bill is. This particular one is a 56% rye, 33% corn, 11% malted barley. And they do a single fermentation batch. It's a sweet mash. It's not a sour mash. And it goes into the barrel at 100 proof. Now, this is I wouldn't say a limited edition, but they do these in batches. So this is bottle 212 of 250. And these are non-chill filtered, and they're made in Danville, Kentucky. Wilderness Trails Bourbon is pretty awesome, and they've got a little bit of something for everybody. They've got an 8-year that they just came out with. They've got a sweet mash. They've got a sour mash. They've got a high rye, and they've got a wheated bourbon.
They kind of remind me a lot of the Frey Ranch stuff for some reason.
Their
and I don't know
bottle
why.
Shape and the way they do everything. Yeah. But so this is a single barrel, and they got the barrel number on here if anybody's interested. It's barrel 16H21-F, and they call it their Settler Select Rye, and it is a single barrel proof. So it's a pretty good one to me. This is actually one of my favorite ryes that I've ever tried.
We need to get our hands on that E.H. Taylor full rye. Yeah.
I still want to try the Jack Daniels one, too.
Oh, I heard that one's good.
Yeah, I almost pulled the trigger on one the other day. I saw it for $64, and I was like,
This one smells better. I'm still getting that, not mineral spirits, but the...
the denatured alcohol smell.
Denatured alcohol smell, yeah.
You got a sensitive little schnoz over there.
Dude, that's just what it smells like.
Everybody's nose is different. I don't get it. On this one, I get a lot more of your traditional bourbon smells. Yeah, I get that like caramel, vanilla, really good oak. This one does have a grain forward note, but it's not grassy. It's more earthy to me.
I like that much better.
This one is a lot more bourbony, I guess you could say, than it is a rye. I mean, it's only 56% rye.
The heat's in there.
But this one has a sweetness,
yes,
along with a peppery note that I really like. I don't get a lot of pepper in the Russells.
That pepper's coming in towards the end for me.
Yes, it definitely does. It's like a black pepper or white pepper kind of tingle. But the Russells lacks a lot of sweetness.
Yeah.
This one, to me, is very sweet for being a rye. And I think that's from it having such a high corn content in the mash bill.
But right.
This is a... Probably by far one of my favorite ryes. So, number six on our list of all the things that we regret doing in boat builds. Number six, we've got wire running pre-planning, or not planning where you're going to run your wire at before you build a boat.
Pick a side, any side. Just stay on that side.
Yep. Well, one thing I will say is that if you are planning on running a lot of graphs, I would put all of your graph wires, transducer wires, and everything on one side of the boat.
Yeah.
And then put all the electrical stuff on the other side of the boat.
With that, your transducer that you mount on your transom needs to be mounted on, if you're looking at the back of your boat at the transom, on the right-hand side.
Yes.
Not the left. You'll get accurate readings if it's on your left. I learned that the hard way.
Yeah, it does mess it up. It's the wash of the prop or whatever. Yep. Yeah. But so, like, I regret this on my boat because I built catwalks on the side of my boat. And when I built them, I had full intention of putting wires up underneath that catwalk.
Yeah.
But when I framed them out, I framed them without any holes or anything to run wire through. So if I was going to run wire now, I'd have to drop it down below the catwalk, try to stick it up to the side of the boat as best I can.
To keep it hidden.
Yeah, and you still would be able to see it standing on the side of the boat, but I'd have to put some kind of wire loom on it, and I don't like putting wire loom if I can help it, because wire loom holds water.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to keep all the water away from the wires if I can. But had I pre-planned it a little bit better, I could have framed in a tube or a PVC pipe or something to hide all those wires and make it a lot easier for me to run, and it wouldn't be dangling all over the place. I could go back and do it now, which I'm going to, but I'm going to have to make a big mess drilling holes through all of that aluminum to get a clean spot to run wires all the way down one side of the boat.
And it's not going to be fun.
No, it's not. I'm not looking forward to it at all.
Employees.
Do what?
Employees.
It's not even that. It's getting it out of the turf.
Yeah.
That's the hardest part is like, because
it's going to get stuck in there.
Yeah, you get these little bitty chips of aluminum and a boat that's already turfed. It's if you don't vacuum them up immediately with a soft bristled brush on the end of your shop vac, you're going to get that stuff stuck in your turf. And it is really, really, you look like you are enjoying that over
there.
That
is good. I do like that one.
Okay, Ryan's back to Ryan. You were not Ryan in the first place. Now you're Ryan.
Ryan is Ryan.
Ryan. What's the next one on the list?
All right, next one is rod tubes. Now, there's a love-hate relationship here because you can make some rod tubes look really freaking good in a boat. Downside, you can't hold as many rods.
Yep.
It takes forever to build a rod tube.
Yep.
And, well, I mean, you're going to spend a lot more money doing it. Probably $150 more. Just on the safe side, just for the PVC and stuff that you're going to need to make the rod tubes. And then you risk breaking eyelids off your rods every time you pull one in or out. So
yeah.
Right, we've gotten to the point where we don't even do rod tubes anymore.
Nope, no rod tubes.
Thankfully, no one's asking for them anymore.
I wouldn't do it even if they ask.
And you're just having a big open compartment, so that way you can put as many rods as you want in there.
Yep.
Or push poles or nav lights or any oars, what anything that's long and odd that won't ship, that won't sit,
start that
sit
over
in any other or won't sit in any other compartment. That's what that rod lockers is pretty good for now without the rod tubes. So rod tubes, I don't suggest doing them. I know they look cool. It's just not worth it.
They're one of those things that's great in theory, and they look really good. So it's like a sexy kind of mod that you're doing when you build your rod locker. But in reality, you can store so much more junk in your rod locker if you didn't have rod tubes.
And they take an astronomical amount of time to fabricate into the boat.
Yeah. You can get away with half of the rod locker space that you actually need if you just didn't have rod tubes.
Yes.
The rod tubes take up so much room.
It's not worth it. Don't do it. Believe me.
Don't. And in all reality, you can buy a pack of rod socks off of Amazon, like a 5-pack for like $10 nowadays.
Yeah, and I mean, I bought a bunch of them from Busby, and they were $10 a pop. I mean, I have a lot of rods, but I didn't buy one for every rod, but I probably bought 80 of them or 8 of them. So I had $8 in them. But
if you had, $100 in rod tubes or $150 in rod tubes plus all the time that it takes to fabricate it and make it look good,
you're still saving money.
You're actually saving money, but you could put 10 rods in the bottom of the rod locker with rod socks on them and have the 4 or 5 that you actually are fishing with at that time sitting on top of all those rods. And you're still cheaper.
Still cheaper.
And you didn't lose any hair because you weren't pulling your hair out making rod tubes. Rod tubes suck. Next up on the list, this is one I'm currently working on, which is fixing your trailer before you build the boat.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had done this right, I would have stripped my boat out.
What comes first, the chicken or the egg?
I'll order both of them on Amazon and let you know. Damn. So if I had done this right, I would have stripped my boat out, pulled my benches out, and while it was still lightweight, pulled the boat off the trailer and completely rebuilt my entire trailer.
Yeah.
What I did was I built my entire boat, went and dumped it in a lake somewhere, left it sitting for 2 weeks, and then worked on my trailer. And then guess what?
I mean, if you have somewhere to put it, then disregard what we're saying, but...
It still sucks because it would have been nice to adjust the trailer and the bunks and make sure everything was lined up while the boat was still nice and lightweight and I could move it around.
Now
it's built out. It's heavy as hell. Getting an on and off trailer sucks.
Yeah.
But I've already done a bunch of mods to my trailer. I put it in the lake for 2 weeks. It filled up full of water. I had to go clean it out after I got it out of the lake. I put it back on the trailer thinking I was done, and then I'm like, crap, I got like 2 or 3 more things that I really need to do. But they're not feasible doing it with the boat on the trailer.
Right.
Now I got to go dump that thing back in the dang water so that I can do more work on my trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. Do the trailer first. The trailer is way more important than you think it is. I know we overlook the trailer.
We do.
Every time. But make sure you have a solid trailer or else all the work that you're doing in the boat is going to be worthless.
We're doing a whole episode on trailers coming up. That was actually one of the suggestions that we had. So we'll get more into trailer stuff.
Yeah.
But if you can help it, when you're in that first stage of your boat build where you got the boat torn down and you're ready to start building on it, pull the boat off the trailer, set it on some jack stands or something, and go ahead and get the trailer done and over with before you even start on the boat build. Your life will be so much easier in the long run.
Man, that's good.
You're really liking that one.
Number 9, not tearing out all the stock foam in the boat.
Yeah.
Or benches or something like that. I would just add that into that whole equation.
Yeah, and we get that from a lot of people. We've done it a couple times, but we see a lot of people that will try to, just cut enough of their bench out so they can drop a small box in there, and then they realize later on, well, hell, I could do so much more if I would just pull this box out and pull this whole entire foam out.
It is easier to just tear everything out of the boat and start from scratch than it is to try to work around or with whatever is currently in the boat.
Yeah.
We have made that mistake multiple times. You think that you're saving money and time. You're not. Because at some point in time, you're going to be like, dang.
Yeah.
If I had just done this or built this completely from scratch, it would have went so much faster, which probably would have saved you money.
And that's the thing is that I think people don't realize how much time it takes to try to remove foam from something that's pre-built. Right. Like if you got a bench and you're trying to pull foam out of it and you just cut the top of it out, it's a pain in the butt and it takes a long time. And you wind up always cutting your hand at some point on the sharp edge of the bench. If you would just take the whole bench out, the foam will usually come out in one giant block. The
whole bench out and then, then you'd have nothing. Like it would take you no time to rebuild whatever you need to.
Exactly. The trackers are the worst. The trackers that have that whole back that's full of foam.
That G3 was pretty.
The G3 is kind of built the same way where you've got the framing is where the foam is up against and it's almost like glued to the inside of it.
Yeah.
So if you would just cut the entire back of the boat out, like the whole decking area, you can get to all that foam and get it out so much easier than you can trying to just cut the top of it off and reuse those walls and stuff. It's just easier just to start over.
Right.
Next on the list, and this is number 10 and our final one, hatch sizing and opening direction.
Yeah.
We both have a boat right now that we currently own that we wish we would have done something different with our hatches. On mine, I have one hatch on the front of my boat that opens in the same direction as the trolling motor. So if my trolling motor is stowed, cannot get that hatch open because it hits the trolling motor, which is it's not a big deal when I'm in the water because I usually got the trolling motor down. But like if I'm at home and I want to get in that hatch or if I want to like work in that boat, I have to put the trolling motor off the front of the boat, which it doesn't go all the way. It hits my trailer. So I've got to have it like in just the right place so that it sits on the handle of my winch.
Yeah.
And hope it doesn't fall just so that I can open that hatch up.
Now I'm gonna put a little stipulation into that. We are working in tiny boats, so sometimes there's some give and take, and I'd say that's one of those situations where you're going to have to do some giving and taking. If you want the hatch there, just know you're not going to be able to get into it if that trolling motor's up.
That is true.
So don't put important things on that side, right, like your switch panel or something like that. But, I get what you're saying, though. It still makes a pretty big inconvenience for you.
And if I had pre-planned it a little bit better, I probably would have put that hatch on the other side of the boat because the way that it opens towards the trolling motor.
Right.
If I would have had it where it opened like towards the side of the boat, I could probably get that hatch about at least halfway open so that I could at least access it. But I just wasn't thinking about it. I knew my trolling motor was going to be on that side. Had I been thinking about it beforehand, I would have laid it all out and said, oh, if I open it this way, I'm going to hit my trolling motor. I should probably put this somewhere else.
Right.
But I waited till it was too late. Like, I had already mounted it and put turf on it when I opened it up for the first time and hit the trolling motor, and I was like, dang, it's too late now. All it would have taken is just a few minutes of...
This is a real quick... Oh, man.
Yeah, that's exactly... Actually, there was a few choice words that were said, but...
Well, hatch sizing would pertain to me. I put one in that was way too wide for what it really should have been. Now, it's lovely having that width when you open it and you need to get down in there and you're looking for stuff. Mm-hmm. It's great. But I have rods all over the deck when I'm fishing, and that width of the hatch interferes with the way the rods can lay on the deck and opening that single hatch efficiently. So... yeah, I wish I would have gone a little bit smaller on the width of that hatch, and then that boat would be, I mean, I have next to zero complaints on that boat aside from that. So
really?
That's a little frustrating.
And that's all going to deal with your fishing style. If you're a tournament bass fisherman and you know you're going to have lids or hatches up front, you need to get in the boat and lay out your rods where they're going to be when you are building your deck.
Yeah.
That way you don't put any hatches that you may need to get into in the way of those rods.
Mm-hmm. Just brown sugar, dude.
You get a lot of brown sugar in that one?
Yeah.
That's a good bottle.
That's a dang good bottle.
And what's that retail? Like $54.
Oh, dude, all day. All day.
All the Wilderness Trail stuff is super affordable. I think the most I've ever seen them for is like 60-something. They're not expensive.
Okay.
Their High Rye Bourbon is really good. I have that one. I've tried the weeded one. I'm not a huge weeder fan, but it is a good weeder.
Yeah.
I would love to get my hands on their 8-year, but it was kind of... I'm not going to say allocated. It just didn't show up here in Georgia. I haven't seen one yet. If I see one, I would snag it up in a heartbeat. Everything I've seen from Wilderness Trail has been super impressive. So I really liked it.
I mean, well, 8 years is probably their oldest thing.
It is.
Right?
It's their first 8 year because it's their 8 year anniversary, and it's 100% their own distillate. They do not source from anybody. Really good stuff.
That makes me really want to try that Frey Ranch stuff.
What is the deal with Frey Ranch? Are they in Texas or something?
God.
Where are they at?
I don't think they're not in Texas. They are out west though, I believe. And they have they grow their own grain and corn and all that stuff.
Really?
So it's like from farm to bottle, like they do it all.
That's cool.
The whole thing. And they're very particular about it, and they have some very good stuff, but it's still new. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so they don't have a whole lot of age statements on everything. And I've never tried them, but I've heard that's very good. Like,
I might have to check them out. I see them on the shelves, and they are kind of pricey.
They're still like $80 or something.
Yeah, I just don't know a whole lot about them.
Yeah.
Now, I know a lot about the Wilderness Trail for two reasons. One, because they're actually very open to social media people. Like, they've been on quite a few podcasts. They've been on YouTube. You know, people have interviewed them. And the only thing they will not talk about is their yeast stuff. They have like a full blown science laboratory where they do all their yeast stuff. Because they make yeast for all these bourbon companies and whiskey companies, they can't reveal information about it. But they will tell you about their history, where they've been, where they're going, the people that work there. You know, the other reason I know a lot about him is my dad did a distillery tour there, and he was super impressed with it. And everything.
Is your dad a rye guy?
He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's gotten into it. He's actually the one that turned me on to this.
Okay.
And he was like, hey, you got to try this. It's one of the best rides I've ever had. And I was like, all right. So,
yeah. I really like that one.
Yeah, if you can find, now they have a regular release rye, and it's good too. But if you can find the barrel proof single barrel, it is amazing and worth the extra little bit of money for it. All right, so I'm glad we got Ryan to Rye. Ryan tonight. Ryan's Ryan.
Let's wrap this up so I can hit the liquor store and find that bottle.
Yeah, get you some. Yum, yum, get you some. That's what that is right there.
That's dang good. Thank you guys for listening to the Drain Plug Podcast. As we mentioned before, please visit tbnation.net. They're the sponsor of this podcast, and also great place for you to be able to find all your John Boat needs: dry hatches, EVA foam, lithium batteries, electric outboards, gas outboards,
inflatable
boats.
We got the inflatables,
plastic boats,
Yeah, we got all the
doodads
and gizmos and everything you could ever want.
Yes, with other things coming down the pipeline, and we greatly appreciate your support. Please click a like on this video if you guys enjoyed it. If you're listening on a podcast platform, please rate the episode. That does help us out tremendously.
Hey, I was looking at our RSS feed the other day, and we got people from all over the globe listening.
Yeah, did you see that guy in Antarctica?
Yes. There's like people all over the place listening. So we really appreciate the people that are taking the time to download this on the podcast platforms and listen to it. And we have a lot of fun going through every week and seeing where people in the world are listening to the podcast at.
We're also open up for topics of discussion.
Yes. So
and
if you are
guests
on a podcast platform, and there's not a way to comment on like Spotify and stuff like that. Yeah. But if you want to shoot us an email, you can email us at support@tbnation.net and tell us that you have a podcast idea or something you want to hear us talk about or a specific product you want us to talk about. If you're on YouTube, drop us a comment, or if you're not comfortable leaving a public comment, you can email us as well. Or
also, if you guys have some local bourbons by you that you want us to try or mess around with or taste on the episode, let us know and we'll see if we can find it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're always open to suggestions. At the end of every episode, we say the same exact thing,
important. At the end of every episode.
I think the Wild Turkey Wilderness Trail is having its full effect.
Holy Moses, we need to get out of here.
Don't forget your drain plug or any of these 10 things that we talked about, because that will make you an angry panda,
absolutely.
I promise.
We appreciate you guys for listening and watching. We'll see you later.
Toodles.